Once more under the breach, dear friend.
Let's close the wall up with our English day.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And we have to disclose at this point on this Saturday, March 12th of the year of our Lord, Anno Domini 2016.
It's not called that anymore.
I don't care what
it's
you
called
think.
It's continuing education. No, I mean current.
Current era. The current era.
Current euphemism.
Current era. And okay. So the current era, as opposed to what's there, the BCE before current era.
Right.
So the current era starts
on the estimate of
on an estimated date of the birth of a specific person who is referred to by his followers as the Lord. So, Anno Domini is good enough for me. Well, AD.
AD is good enough for you. Yeah. Is it because you like Latin?
I don't necessarily like Latin, but I don't object to Latin. And I think, you know, basically for about 2,000 years, we referred to the time frame as AD.
Next, you're going to say that Pluto's still a planet.
It is.
See what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Now, the fact that it's a dwarf planet, it is officially a dwarf planet, right?
And that's technically a planetoid.
Well,
it's officially what I used to call people in school.
It's officially a dwarf planet. And I think discrimination against dwarfs is bad. First off, it's round, sort of like a planet's supposed to be. It's not like oblong like a potato or something. Secondly, the Dargon thing has three moons. It ought to rate for something. What is it? Okay, well, it's not a moon. And it's round.
Mm-hmm.
And it has tectonic movement, and it has all kinds of good stuff that other planets have. Why would, you know, I realize, and the way they deplanetized it was a political maneuver.
I think it's
political.
You think it's political. I think that the smear job on Pluto just doesn't deserve it. I think you just like Greek now. So you like Latin and Greek. I see what's going on.
Well, you know, I think that the next planet should be called Donald Duck, too.
You got Pluto. Might as well.
Well, you know, there's one of the things that's going on is the perturbation of Pluto and Neptune.
The perturbation is not a word most people are familiar with.
Well, the slight variance in their orbits indicate that there's something out there that's big that's pulling on them.
Uh-huh.
So there may be another really big planet
way out there. Really dark and way out there. Yeah.
And if they run across something like a gas giant, a really big planet that's out there somewhere, are they going to say, well, no, that's really not a planet because it's too far out and it's... Look, there's this big round thing, relatively big, that has gravity, that has tectonic movement, that has moons of its own, and it circles the sun in the general plane of the rest of the planets, but it's not really a planet. Okay.
Yeah,
and the thing is,
see,
you'll
like this.
You know how the vote occurred.
I've got a piece here that has just been brought up by the same group that labeled Pluto a dwarf planet,
mm-hmm.
and by the same definition, mm-hmm. hasn't been excluded. Our moon is a dwarf planet.
Well, the point is, our moon circles another planet, so it is disqualified and always has been. Because if it circles another planet, it can't be a planet.
That's not in the definition.
It was originally.
Yes, that's what's changed and caused Pluto not to be a planet.
But I don't think
it's completely unfair. It's a smear campaign.
I grew up with nine planets, and to arbitrarily, after the majority of delegates had left, so that they didn't technically even have a quorum,
mm-hmm.
they voted, and it wasn't on the agenda, and they waited till the majority of delegates had left, and it was a secret thing because they knew that the majority of delegates would not vote to exclude, to kick Pluto out of the...
Right. They didn't even...
out of the solar system.
Ask Pluto
they
its
didn't.
Opinion.
And I think that by itself, we don't know with any certainty that there aren't intelligent beings living on Pluto.
Okay. Now, having had that,
Pluto could have fleas.
Right. Now, having said that, it sounds like we're talking about the silliness. It is in some ways silly because the end impact in our lives of whether or not Pluto is a planet or a dwarf planet is only going to be apparent in the journals reporting whether or not do you call it a planet or a dwarf planet.
But it's really important to geeks.
Right. And that same strange labeling process applies to economics, in that we try to put a definition on things like when the economy is slowing down or when it's speeding up or how that works. But there's still words that are missing. We don't have words for certain things, and there's a debate over what words we should be using. And sometimes the words change, like recession had a definition. For a long time, the definition was two quarters of the year, half of the year in order, so altogether, of, they called it negative growth. Here's another one. We call it shrinkage. So when the economy is in decline.
Right.
Okay, economy's in decline for half a year, that's a recession. Except that the Great Recession was the first time we changed that, because we had a quarter in decline, a quarter following it in incline. We expanded, we grew, not by much, but some. And then we had another quarter of decline at the beginning, and we're calling that the beginning of the recession. And even at the time, they said this is a recession. Even though it skips a quarter in the middle, it's still a recession. So that was a change in the definition. And you can debate it at the same method that you use to debate whether or not Pluto is a planet or a dwarf planet. Mm-hmm. For practical purposes, none of the numbers changed on Pluto. Pluto still has the same orbit, no matter what we call it. All of the math used to get into Pluto's orbit is the same. And when we're looking at recessions, the definition hasn't really changed enough for us to make it. Now, it does cause a heated debate when people are saying, are we in a recession? I don't know. Are we in a recession? But how do you feel about the economy is probably the bigger piece there.
And that is a big piece of the economic news this week, is that the small business confidence indicator dropped to 91.6 from like 92 point something.
That's still a good area,
but it's still, but it's down.
It's down from what it was. Yeah,
and the bears out there, and there's a ongoing battle between the bears and the bulls.
See, there's another definition. If you're in a bear market, they say 20% down, and so the people that want that expect a 20% decrease. Well, who sets the label 20% down? There is no defining body. Nobody out there says...
You need to use an algorithm here.
Right.
There's no controlling legal authority.
Right. Exactly. So a bear could be whatever you want to call it, just like a recession could be whatever you want to call it. There's a kind of a consensus on what they are, but the bears out there are saying confidence down means...
So what you're saying is Fuzzy Wuzzy was a bear.
Right.
Fuzzy Wuzzy had no hair.
Fuzzy Wuzzy wasn't very fuzzy.
See, that's it. Yeah. Well, you know, but it's important because one of the things that I picked up from reading Barron's this morning was that in election years, when there is the incumbent president cannot run, so that everybody's running against the incumbent president.
Where did you pick this up?
Barron's, this morning.
This morning? They've been listening to the radio program.
Obviously. And
we've been talking about this for 3 years.
Well, what they did is they went back to 1928 and came forward, and they discovered
they did their own research. They should have just cited me.
Well, yeah, but you didn't have statistics, and you have to have statistics if you're going to make a cite. See, so
I should have published it when I was talking about it rather than
Well, yeah, but you have to have numbers and data behind it, see.
Right.
And what they've discovered is since 1928, when the president is at the end of a second term is not running for office again, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, or the market in general, has dropped 2.8%. Now, on years when the president is running for re-election, it's up 12.6 on average.
Right. There are ways of making those numbers look even worse to
really
be appropriate for now.
Okay.
So the president being in a re-election campaign does make the market go up. That's just...
Well, at least there is a coincidental
But it's enough in the behavior and consistent enough that I see it as, yes, there's cause behind this. It's a whole year of good news about things that have happened. Even if half of the people don't believe it, the other half do. Doesn't matter if it's a Republican or Democrat. But in years where there's no incumbent, as they say in Barron's, where they say the president is not running for
re-election. Well, there is an incumbent, but he's not running. When the incumbent is not running,
there's no incumbent running for re-election as the president. Their numbers are correct. You can make it look worse by adding in one other factor. And no vice presidential incumbent running. It's worse.
That's right. And who's the vice president?
Richard Nixon? No. Donald Biden? No. Biden something Biden.
Yeah, I have trouble remembering who.
Biden.
We have a vice president.
Is vice president, but he's not really. I mean, he's like FDR's vice presidents before Truman actually became president, which is to say that they show up places occasionally for certain
funerals.
Reasons. Yeah. If you go back 100 years, that was the normal way vice presidents. I mean, we had vice presidents that would just go out and drink at bars all day long. Some pretty good historical information there. But back to the economy. In years where there is no one's job to defend the administration, because they weren't part of the administration, the market performs even worse. And this is why I say it's consistent enough. These are years that the media is full of no side saying good news about the economy. So in a year where a Republican is running for re-election, they're saying, look at the taxes that I've cut. Look at the boost that is expected for the economy. In years that Democrats are running for re-election, they're saying, look at the social programs that I put in, whatever. Half of the people go, wow, the economy, my life, my paycheck, all things look good because somebody's looking out for me. In years where that's not happening, where both halves believe that the world is going down to someplace hot in a wicker contraption.
Well, we have a caller on, by the way, our telephone number to call in here, 773-1400. Area code's 254, presuming that today is Saturday, March 12th. We have a caller. I do need to issue our disclosure. The Personal Wealth Coach is not just the name of this radio program. It's also the name of an SEC-registered investment advisor based in Salado, Texas. And the two guys who are talking on here are principals in that investment advisory firm. So there.
Right.
We've been disclosed.
And the phone number, 254-947. No, that's the wrong phone number. I was going to give the one for the office. 254-773-1400.
That's the telephone number to call.
Yes.
I said that earlier.
You just said the area code. You didn't finish it.
Oh, anyway. Anyway, we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yes, this is Rick in Salado. You say Salado, I say Salado.
Well, you have to go to San Antonio if you want. The only Salado in the area is in San Antonio, so you obviously are in San Antonio.
Yeah, No. I eat tomatoes in Salado.
Mm.
You say potato, I say potato.
Mm. You do?
No.
I believe he's quoting.
One of the things that a lot of people don't realize that you always talk about it. I don't know if you always do, but the market usually has already made allowances for things that happen, right?
Yeah.
Some markets do. Bond markets do it better than the stock market.
The stock market makes allowances not only for things that have happened, but things that are going to happen that may not happen.
And things that may not have happened that or may have happened.
Right.
All right. I submit that in 2007, remember the toxic investments that got revealed that they were toxic.
That was in 2008, but okay, go ahead.
In 2007 was the top.
Okay, I stipulate 2008.
Okay.
Did not the markets already allow for the election of 2007-2008 that Barack Obama would be president? Therefore, I submit that they were already looking at the future and saying, we need to get out of this.
No.
Get out now.
No.
No.
No?
No.
Nope.
It would make it easy. I wish things like big fundamental problems with the economy were as surface level as the market movement. But the market, the market will follow the economy down, and sometimes it leads the economy down. That's one of the things that where people look at the economy predicts recessions. What is it that you said? 8 out of every 4 times it predicts a recession.
Well, yeah, I've heard several numbers, 9 out of 4, 8 out of 4. Basically, when the market goes into a nosedive and says, oh, we're going to have a recession, about twice as often as we really have recessions.
Right. So so in an actual recession, and this there's a lot of debate about this amongst the behavioral economists. What causes a recession? If the market tanks and a lot of people get scared and they say, I'm going to stop selling things or I'm going to stop buying things to sell because I may not be able to sell them as fast because I'm scared, that causes a ripple effect. And that could be a cause of a recession. It's part of the reason why the Federal Reserve is so careful about how they talk, because scaring people into a recession can happen. But if you have a real fundamental problem with the economy, like a lot of mortgages that were issued without the ability to pay them, and you don't know how much impact they have on the economy, that's going to cause the market to crash.
The market followed the collapse, the financial collapse down. Nobody, and there was a series of documents released this week on what was going on during that period that just now were released from the archives. Nobody, including Warren Buffett. Warren Buffett was asked, you know, who do you blame for this? Who knew about it? And he says, nobody and nobody. He said, if you wrote down everybody who wasn't culpable, who was in a senior financial position in the United States, you'd have a blank piece of paper.
Right.
And but the point is, you ask a question. You said, was Barack Obama's election what caused the market to go down? Man, well, let me put it like this. The market loves Barack Obama.
Yeah. It's that's kind of undeniable.
Look at the level it was when he was elected and the level it is today after 7.5 years of him being in office. The market hates Republicans. It loves Democrats.
No.
All right, I got a question.
Okay.
The
I wouldn't say hate or love, but
well, the time frame between Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan, that's 79 to 80, can you correlate some of the conditions between then and the possible Republican election? Or if the Donald or the Republicans take over this coming January, what do you is there any kind of correlation that you can see that Barack's economy goes into the Republican economy?
I can see the
Jimmy Carter economy to the Ronald Reagan. What are the can you look at that peaks and valleys to see what kind of is there a possibility that we're
answer is yes. I can very clearly say it. Right after Ronald Reagan took over, the market went into a nosedive, and we had a major recession.
Now,
correct.
It turned around and went the other direction afterwards, and they did some things. It was both Reagan Bush headed up some of the task forces.
You had the 1982 recession right after we had a bear market in 1980 right after Reagan was elected. The market started recovering, and then in 1982 we had a full-blown recession. And you may recall, if you've been involved in the market for any length of time, there was this little event in 1987. When the Reagan tax plan, which raised taxes rather dramatically on almost everything, went through, and the market dropped 30%. So I can see a real correlation there, and it would be sort of unpleasant if the Ronald got elected.
The Donald got elected. Now, there are other...
Ronald McDonald.
Let's come at it from the other side as well. During the 80s, we did have a boom in the economy, and it was reflected in the stock market during the period. But if you're looking at direct economic impact of a president, we're going again back to something that we've said a long time. Election cycles can have a short-term impact on the market. Presidents really, really don't have a lot of control of either the economy or the market long-term. Yeah. They can have an impact on it day-to-day or even month-to-month. Even in a year, the election cycle has a lot greater impact on what the market is doing than a president does, just because the type of news that's coming out. Old Baldy across here, me as well, we like to joke about something, and we joke about the market feels something, or the market likes something, or loves something, or hates something. And the reality is that's not true. The market doesn't feel. All the people in the market feel a lot of different things. And about half of the people are Democrat and about half of the people are Republican. So it's really going to be dependent on the economy a lot more than the person.
Okay. One last question.
Okay.
Do presidents own an economy? When do they own that history? When do they get that tag to them?
Okay.
I don't see the current president ever getting tagged with any responsibility at all.
Okay.
Well, then you're not looking. You're not looking at all hard.
It's the same.
They do.
Yeah, every president gets tagged because it's their time in office. There's not there's not a governing body that sets out and says, did this economy actually belong to Bill Clinton or did it belong to George H.W. Bush? Can we take a vote on this? And then, no, it's not even unanimous. It is a statement that people say during the Bush years, the economy, during the Clinton years, and so on. And Obama's going to get tagged with his years in office, even though, just like Ronald Reagan didn't make the market do what it did, just like George H.W. Bush didn't cause the recession, you can go through a lot of areas here. The reality is that he's going to get tagged for the economy. It's going to happen.
Okay. And let me tell you what he's going to get tagged with. It's very simple. This is the facts. During the period of time that he's been president, unemployment has gone from about 13% to 4.9%. It probably will be lower when he finishes his presidency. The stock market has gone from the Dow Jones, the most negative thing I can say is that the S&P 500 was around 800, 900 when he took office, and it's a little higher today. It's like 2020 today. So what you've got is during the time you say he's not getting any credit for it. You're right. He's not getting tagged for the fact that the stock market has between doubled and tripled since he's been president.
But later people will tag him.
Unemployment rate has come down by 50% since he's been president. The number of people employed has risen by tens of millions since he's been president. Yeah. So he has presided over, he has been the CEO of the United States during a period of time when the economy prospered and improved dramatically. So eventually he'll get credit for it.
Now let me come back to something. Let me address the underlying thing here. And it's something that we've said many times on the radio.
Yeah.
You're understanding our frustration right now.
You got frustrations?
Oh, yeah. When we look at Barack Obama being tagged with the recovery or George W. Bush being tagged with the cause of the recession.
Right.
That's just silliness. If you go back to any time in history, it's just silliness. Unless the president does one of just a few things. There are some things that the president can do. One of the things they can do is be a very populist person who wants to shut borders and decrease trade and take away free trade. That's a big one. You can look at every time that's happened, it leads to really, really bad things in the economy.
Generally, it's Congress that does that.
Yeah, but Congress generally can't do it without a presidential approval, with a veto-free.
Right.
It's too divided at any given point to do that. So the president has to be involved. And that means that the president's only responsible very rarely for negative things and almost never for positive things. But the media is going to give the president the term the CEO, and he used it. It was almost a direct quote from every newspaper. The difference between the president and the CEO is if the CEO shows up to any employee and says, you're fired, they're fired. If the president came to me and said, you need to leave the nation, I'd say, stick it in your ear.
Well, wait we got a guy running for president who wants to throw certain people out of the nation.
That's true.
Two last questions. Are there any bubbles right now?
Yes.
Burst?
Yes.
And
all depends on how much soap there is in the water.
What if, can you go both ways? If the left takes over or keeps in power, or the right takes over, can you see... Can you be a fortune teller?
I can.
We can try. Yeah.
You can try.
Yeah. We can try.
I can tell you that. I can tell you that even if the left or the right take over, we're in deep trouble. On the Republican candidates right now, with the exception of John Kasich, have all called for extremely high tariffs.
Yeah.
And a spending plan that would require either massive deficits or huge increases in taxes.
Yeah.
That is one of the reasons that small business sentiment is on the downside. Now, the Republicans and now the Democrats, very frankly, Hillary Clinton hasn't said anything that's been too radical, but Bernie Sanders, who is in a contender for the nomination,
yeah,
has also, along both the Republicans on the right and Bernie Sanders on the left, have called for dramatic increases in tariffs, which would probably put us into a recession. Last time we had the level of increases in tariffs that have been called for by the leading Republicans and by Bernie Sanders, that is the consensus that economists have reached on what was the major cause of turning a recession into the Great Depression of the 1930s, is putting up tariffs. And if both the three leading Republicans and Bernie Sanders have all called for huge tariffs, which basically is how we got into the Great Depression in World War II.
Right. We haven't answered one of your other questions. You said, are there any bubbles?
Yeah, well, one more and I'll get off. Is divided government good or bad for business?
Yes.
It depends on the time. Really depends on the time. What's popular at the moment? Okay.
You can answer the question.
Okay.
All right. The last one, then I'll get off and listen.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
And we'll get the, are there any bubbles as well. So, I mean, if you think of most times in our nation's history, divided government has been a lot better than undivided government. There are a few times in our history, but they're really, really important when we need to we need a united government. And those are when we're in physical crisis war mode. If we're being attacked, we need a united government. If we have a divided government, then only things that both sides agree on can pass. And as weird and wacky as that is, it means that usually the things that get passed, as long as both sides have to agree on them, usually they're not bad for anybody, not too bad for anybody.
Now, there's an extreme to that, and we saw that in 2011.
Right.
Where when government gets too divided, in other words, let's just say we had Bernie Sanders in the White House and the Tea Party running the House of Representatives.
Right. Nothing would happen.
Well, not only would nothing happen, we wouldn't get a budget passed. And the United States would effectively default, which would not be good for business or for the stock market or for the economy. We came very close to that in 2011, got our long-term credit rating reduced to below that of Burundi or something.
Yeah, we need a divided but cordial government.
Yeah, we need a cooperative divided government. That's why I say, you ask if the left or the right took power. I am firmly of the opinion that we need a moderate president.
You're right.
And by the way, I know you're going to disagree with me on this. I think the issue is that our current president is a moderate president. Now, a lot of people will disagree, however.
Just comparing to Bernie Sanders, and they're like, you're right. He's not that far left.
Yes, he's a little bit left of center,
His approval rating right now is way up because of Bernie Sanders and because of Donald Trump, because they're showing he really is a centrist president.
You know, he basically has, like a lot, like most presidents, moved to the center since he's been president. And I know that most of the people who are listening to this say that there's absolutely nothing that he can do that is good because they've made up your mind that he's bad. But when you look at the facts again, and I think history is going to very clearly give him a lot of credit, and you're going to say, well, that's unfair. No, it's not unfair. The leadership, and I think one of the crucial things, Jake, that does have an effect on the markets, and it does have an effect on the economy, is the president's ability to lead. Ronald Reagan had some disastrous economic policies. He raised taxes. He got us involved in combat situations where he wouldn't allow the troops to carry weapons or they had their weapons, but they didn't have any ammunition.
The largest increase as a percentage of the GDP in spending in the government in any time between now and World War II, far more than George W. Bush or Barack Obama did, if you look at it as a percentage of the economy.
Ronald Reagan increased the size of government. He raised taxes. He strongly encouraged a couple of things to occur where he collaborated, like the raise in taxes that undoubtedly created the recession. He encouraged a lot of things, which may or may not have been good for us.
But he was an amazing leader.
He did manage to negotiate this and bluff the Soviet Union out of existence. But the point is, his actual policies may not have been at all good. And most of them weren't, by the way.
It's true for most presidents.
But his ability to make us feel good about ourselves produced a positive, almost euphoric attitude in the United States. And we did much better as a result. Now, Jimmy Carter, on the other hand, if he had any leadership capability, I missed it.
You can look at some of his individual decisions that were actually pretty good, but
and
he's
I can
such
also,
a micromanager, bad leader.
And I can also say that our current president, Barack Obama, is eloquent, intelligent, has actually had some pretty good policy decisions, but he has really not been an effective leader. And as a result of not being an effective leader, we don't feel very good about ourselves right now. And he, you know...
Neither does the rest of the world.
And what we desperately need at this point is somebody who is an effective leader. And I'm going to be really weird here. And apparently myself and who's the guy who just endorsed him, the presidential candidate who just endorsed Trump.
Carson.
Dr. Carson endorsed Trump for exactly the same. I'm not going to endorse Trump, but I'm going to say I think he'd make a very effective president. I think he'd make a very good president. And the reason I think he would is I think he would immediately pivot away from being the hothead that you see on the campaign trail today to being very cerebral, very presidential. And I think he's an actor.
Yeah, and I'll agree
and
with that.
He would get up there and he'd make a good leader. And whatever he did was beside the point. Yeah, he'd make us feel good about ourselves.
This whole prediction thing, if Donald Trump is elected, he's not going to do the whole bombast thing against Congress if he wants anything to get done. He's going to recognize that he can't force Paul Ryan or the majority Republican group to do things that are just flat out against the Constitution. Those are things that he's saying to be elected into the primary. Now let's flip it around and say, what if Hillary Clinton is elected? Okay, we're not talking Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders wouldn't be able to get anything done. There would never be a budget. They're just because he would veto it, everyone.
Yeah.
That just wouldn't happen. So unless it had a supermajority in the Senate, we're not going to have it. But Hillary Clinton, I'm going to put in the same boat as Donald Trump.
Yeah.
She's going to come to the center during her presidency. Bill Clinton did. If people doubt that, just look. NAFTA was a very Republican bill.
Mm-hmm.
I realize Donald Trump is against all free trade. That's not a normal Republican trait. That's one of the few traits that he has just completely dumped out the window from the Republican Party is free trade.
Well, I have a funny feeling as soon as he became president, he'd be pro-free trade.
I hope so.
No, because he's been pro-free trade throughout his career. He has international businesses. And basically what he would be doing is if he did all the stuff he said he was going to do with regard to shutting down free trade, he would bankrupt himself.
Well, he would bankrupt the country as
right.
well.
Right, and, you know, so he... What Ben Carson said about him and his endorsement, I think, is completely correct. The guy, when you talk to him privately, when you see him, when he's not on the primary debate stage, is a completely different person than the guy you see in the primary debates. In
right.
the primary debates, he is pandering to the people who are going to vote in the primary. He's an actor. He knows who his audience is.
He said some things that I'm pretty... Hopefully, he doesn't believe a lot of things that hopefully he doesn't believe.
Oh, I'm convinced because what he believes, what he says is going to change in 2 minutes. He can reverse himself.
He said that he was planning on pulling troops out of Europe and troops out of South Korea because they need to pull their own weight and because the tremendous expense to the budget. And so it's another Republican thing that in this last debate he's really pushed away from. The problem with that is that if we're no longer in South Korea, then North Korea will invade them. There's not a if. There's not a maybe. This is a stated goal, and they're crazy. They're going to do it. And if they invade, then the South Koreans don't have nukes. The North Koreans might nuke, and then what? Now we're back to invading North Korea. Are you using our own nukes? What are we doing here? Because... if nukes get used, we've got to get involved because they might get used on us.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're talking about changing foreign policy that much, he's got to know at some level that that means
sure.
that Samsung is no longer going to be producing phones and that a lot of our economy, which has a really nice trade agreement with South Korea, is going to fall apart.
Well, let me tell you, the big impact of North Korea invading South Korea is we wouldn't have iPhones.
We wouldn't
Samsung,
have Androids.
No, Samsung.
We wouldn't have iPhones. Both
Samsung
of them.
Mates the display for the iPhone.
Right.
And let me tell you, if you want to get to the American people really
take
quick.
Take away their smartphones. See what happens.
Say, I'm sorry, no more smartphones because North Korea invaded South Korea. And we'll say nuke North Korea immediately.
Right. Yes, flatten them. Make them the glass that we use on our phone. We won't. It'll provide its own power. Yeah, we're pretty short-sighted as a nation. We've got some commercials that we need to run. We're late in the hour, and we haven't even started them.
Okay, we're going to do commercials because KTEM and Town Square Media have to stay in business, unlike oil companies. And we'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And today is Saturday, March 12th, 2016. And if you'd like to give us a call, the area code is 254. Local number is 773-1400. And you can interject your thoughts, comments, or complaints, or whatever you want to throw in here. Hey, we want to talk about the market a little bit. I know it's boring. Matter of fact, I called in yesterday to find out what the market had done. So, well, I think it's not much, nothing special. Yeah, Dow was only up, what, 200 and some points yesterday. It was nothing big.
It's
you know,
only not boring when it's going down.
Yeah, and so for the week, the stock market was up 1.1%, which if we want to count that as the Dow, 1.2 if for the S&P 500. Year to date, the market is still down, though. That's one of the things that we miss in the minor euphoria. The Dow's down 1.22. The S&P 500 is down 1.06 year to date. So we're still not in that recovery. And we're still down about 6.5% from the high last year. So we're certainly not in a correction. We are, for whatever it's worth, up from the bottom more than we're down from the top, and the momentum seems to be pushing us upward at this point, so that's a good sign. And there's some very significant, there's nothing of true economic significance that happened this last week, except policy changes by the European Central Bank.
Mario Draghi did basically the same thing that's happened in Japan, in that they are charging large commercial banks to give them loans. And that's a it's an interesting factor here. They're being asked, these large commercial banks are being asked to pay the central bank money to put their money on deposit. Usually it's the other way around. Usually the central bank pays these big banks money, just like you get paid if you have a long-term savings account or whatever. And in this case, it's requiring those large banks to have deposits in reserve and then telling the large banks that they have to pay to have them deposited.
But there was a new twist in this one.
What's that?
Really fascinating new twist. What he said is, yes, if you put money on deposit with us, we're going to charge you even more interest than we charged you before, banks.
Right.
But we will loan you money for free, no interest.
Right.
It gets better. We will pay you 0.4% if we loan you money. Now, this is, get this, the central bank will loan money
to big commercial banks.
To a commercial bank, let's say loan them $1 billion. And if they'll charge them no interest on that. If they will then in turn loan that money back out to people who want to borrow money, the central bank will pay the commercial bank 0.4% a year on money they are loaning out and supposedly getting interest from the borrower.
It's basically the central bank paying part of the mortgage interest for you.
And so the issue is, guys, make loans. And this is the,
that's what the central bank is
this
saying.
Is, yeah. And it's apparently already working. Because when the European Central Bank went to negative interest rates, banks in the European Union were basically not loaning money to anybody. They're just running scared.
Because there's really two ends of the spectrum. You either loan too much money out and they've just been burned with that. And the other dangerous thing is not loaning any money out. And they're being burned by that mm-hmm. now.
And so they've got deflation going on. And an interesting thing about deflation is if you have money in hand in a deflationary environment, and in Europe they do have deflation, if you have money in hand, it gets worth more just because it's sitting there.
Yeah.
So if the banks just hang on to their money, or if they deposit it at the European Central Bank even, they basically are making money by not loaning any money out. And what, by the way, I saw that the headline on this was Enter the Draghi.
Yeah.
And for those of you who don't remember the old movie, Enter the Dragon.
Bruce Lee.
It's pretty cool. Anyway, so that's why the markets did some strange things. Initially, they went up when Mario Draghi said we are going to make negative interest rates. But the other thing, of course, is they raised their buying of bonds on the open market from roughly $63 billion, not euros, a month up to about $86 billion a month. And they said, we're not just buying government bonds anymore. We just buy whatever we can find out there.
They're trying to get money into the hands of those bondholders. They're trying to get them to spend the money. What we've found in the United States is that's kind of a zero-sum game. They don't tend to spend the money. They tend to reinvest the money in other bonds because they just got a big profit on the bonds that they had because the government paid them. But the money's there. There is a little bit of friction that happens.
The issue of encouraging people to sell their bonds, then they have cash in hand, and running negative interest rates even more negative, and paying the banks to make loans should result in interest rates on bonds coming down further, which means people won't invest it in bonds. They'll put it in something else. They'll put it in something that actually creates jobs.
That's the hope.
They are literally having deflation, formal deflation in Europe. We're having some of it in the United States right now.
Only in certain areas. Yeah.
And we'll talk about next hour. We want to do a primer again on why deflation is bad. But you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. And we actually are a registered investment advisory firm that manages portfolios for people when we're not talking on Saturday mornings on the radio. And we have a voicemail during the weekends and a regular set of wonderful people to answer the phone during the week if you're interested in talking to us off the air. And the telephone numbers in there would be locally 947-1111, or
you can reach that toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. Or you can email us directly, jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. You can go to our webpage, tpwc.com or thepersonalwealthcoach.com. And listen to podcasts. Until next hour, this has been The Personal Wealth.
Fair, balanced. Your Fox News radio station in Central Texas. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM. Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.